Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to the Roarcast in Focus, and today we are going to be talking to accent coach Pamela van der Wey on why singers lose their accent when they sing. This recording was actually part of my research for the video, but Pamela has so much expertise and knowledge on accent and the voice, I had to share the whole chat with you guys. In this episode, Pamela shares some fascinating insights on the psychology of accents, on the development of accents and the development of singing styles, and shares her thoughts on vocal training. If you'd like to watch the video, Why Singers Lose Their Accent When They Sing, the link is in the description, but enjoy the interview. First of all, what are the elements that make up an accent?
There are four main elements, but you're going to hear them talked about in different terms. So we can talk about the speech sounds or the phonemes. The phonemes are individual speech actions that contribute to a specific accent of a specific language, any language. Those can be broken down into consonants and vowels. There's also rhythm, which is the relative timing of each of those specific phonemes. So when you string a bunch of individual speech sounds together, how long you hold each sound is going to cause a rhythm to occur. Same thing, anybody who plays music knows what rhythm is. Intonation or melody would be the relative pitch pattern. So where are the notes falling? It might not be as specific as music, but a relationship of how does this language travel forward? Is it fairly even and monotone, or is it going to go up at the end or down at the end? And then this mysterious thing called placement. Singers talk about placement and speakers talk about vocal tract posture. So vocal tract posture is just the overall relationship among the parts of your body that contribute to speech or singing. And how do those generally relate? And it's very difficult to discuss, which is why I think that singers have defaulted to the idea of placement and where is that sound hitting? Well, sound's hitting everywhere. It's going through your body, it's coming through everywhere. But when you think to focus it in a certain spot, that might cause your body to make certain actions. Your soft palate might rise very high, your pharyngeal tissues might move away or closer or whatever. So those are the four main parts that contribute to accent.
It's so interesting with placement because I knew that would be the one. I was like, I'm not sure what term accent people use. And of course, vocal coaches always use the placement term.
The thing is, you know, terminology is being created all the time. Really important to be aware of that, because I like to say that talking about talking is difficult.
Yes.
You know, a lot's happening. Speech and singing, they're both complex psychophysical processes. So it's not just your body. And I think that, you know, I've seen quite a number of your videos, and I know that you speak very technically about what's happening in the body, which I do too. But that's not the end of communication, whether that's spoken or whether that's singing. It's not. There's that other element, which is communication. And I don't know if you've used the word communication, but I've seen you talk about that in singers. That sort of the story, really.
Yeah. Well, I always say that singing is as much storytelling as anything else, because if you lose that, then you've forgotten what singing is about, really.
Really, it's really true. You can sing technically beautifully and no one can care. Because we only sing and we only speak to get an idea out of our heads and souls and bodies into somebody else's. We're trying to share an experience. And if we've taken it past that into here's the note that I'm hitting, and here's how long I'm holding it, and here's how much breath pressure is coming through, or air pressure is coming through here. Then instead of a communication, we just have a display of physical prowess, which is interesting.
Yes.
But not the same.
Yes. And I suppose that's also why there are so many singers who aren't technically wonderful, but are very, very successful because they're able to communicate so successfully.
Yeah. And I think some of those singers, maybe they haven't been through a traditional training program, so they haven't been subject to the idea of right and wrong when it comes to creating sound. And while it's really interesting to be able to observe ourselves and say, what's the effect on these people when I do this with my body and make these sounds, that's fascinating, but it's limiting to say, this is the right way to do this.
Absolutely.
Unless we're talking about physical danger, you know. You know, you don't want to create a sound by whapping yourself in the face with your fist. That's going to be a problem all the time.
You know? Of course.
That's the wrong way to go about it if you want longevity. Yes. Other than for a safety issue, all sound is good sound. You know, good sound is sound that gets you what you want. And we look at some of these singing styles that develop over time, you know, because we continually develop different singing styles. It's because we take a style that we know and we push it in a way we don't expect. We give a hook for the audience that they understand, a way they can relate, and we add one thing. We add one thing. I really love the idea of how language changes, and I'm thinking now, because of what you do, how singing changes over time.
Yes, well, it's constantly changing. And you can even hear, like, 10 years back, the stylistic nuances that have adapted and changed over a very small period of time.
It's really amping up because we have the internet and we can seek out novel experiences and we can share novel experiences with people. When we hear something that we haven't heard before, we quickly tell everybody, have you heard this? You know, there's a woman who does throat singing, and I can't think of what her name is. I wish I had written her name down or to remember to tell you, but throat singing happens in several cultures in the world. But this is a woman who's not from any of those cultures, but she's taken those techniques and added them to a sort of a Western culture, and it's fascinating to hear the work.
Is it Ivor that you're thinking of? She says Icelandic.
It might be.
Yeah, she's using a little bit of like Mongolian Tuvan throat singing, but then also some traditional Icelandic styles as well, and then also like Western styles. So
she's taking things that, so a Westerner can hear it and have something to hang on to. Because if we hear something we've just never heard before, we have no way of putting it in context, it's actually quite frightening. Our minds don't know what to do. So our minds are there to categorize and predict. It's one of the main things they do. And I always think about categorization and prediction of the human mind, like putting things away in the kitchen in drawers. If you pick up a fork, it goes in the drawer where your forks go. But when you pick up like great, great, great aunt's such and such a thing, and it's like this weird, what did they use this for? You say, and you're like, I don't know what drawer it goes in. I have no relationship except that it should be in the kitchen somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. That's what happens when we hear something that's too far away from our own experience. But the woman we've been talking about, she has some Western tradition, some Icelandic tradition, some throat singing tradition, and brings them together in a new way so that it makes for a Westerner. I'm a fan of throat singing, but if I hadn't heard it before, I would still be fascinated, you know, and the result was the world was fascinated because there were three groups of people that had entry points into listening to her work. As we talk about singing or talk about, you know, accents in singing, why do some singers seem to change their accent or purposely change their accent when they sing a song? There's a lot of reasons for it. But it's all got to do at the end of the day with relating to the audience. What's the audience expectation, and how are they, that individual artist, going to be able to sing this song to that audience and have it accepted?
Ah, yes. Interesting. And this specifically happens or more often happens to British singers.
I think that's a myth.
Do you think so?
Yeah. That's a myth. That is coming from, and we all have it, because, you know, American singers will say, oh, why is this person singing like this other person over here? We're listening from a listening bias. We can't avoid bias. Mm-hmm. Bias has to do with our experiences. Our life experience leads up to, when I see this, it means that. It has meant that, so it's probably going to mean that again. And so when we hear things like, you know, there's a lot of myths about accent. One of them is that English people are better at them. Americans think that English people are better at them, and they're not. If I watch English television, I see just as many accent irregularities as I do in American television when Americans are attempting to sound like people from England. But it's easy to have a mythology, have a myth go forward to say, oh, well, that supports already our idea that the English have a queen, so they're more educated than us. So probably these are all these weird little myths that fly around, these stereotypes, these things. And sometimes the stereotypes lead us to think that things are happening that aren't really happening. Accent is affected by some singing styles, but the extreme singing styles. So opera is going to change how a vowel sounds because the soft palate is on the moon and the pharyngeal tissues are away, away, away. Versus if I were going to start singing from this place right here where I have all my pharyngeal, everything has been pushed forward in my pharyngeal tissues and my soft palate is way down. And if I started singing from here, that would be a very different sound than if I started singing from a place where everything is really, really open. And that's going to change the vowels. If my soft palate is open, probably my jaw hinge is also going to drop open. And once your jaw hinge drops open, that changes how fast things occur. That changes the shape of the ultimate, especially for vowel sounds, it changes those most typically. Vowel sounds are the shaping of voiced air. And then consonants are kind of the segmenting or the obstructing of voiced or unvoiced air. And so we do hear accents on the vowels more often than we do on consonants in songs and things. There are notable exceptions, and I don't want to say things in too broad of terms, because the truth is, if you hear an accent in a song, it's because someone chose to do it that way. Whether or not they did it consciously. When we first hear a song, I mean, most people don't decide to sing a cover of a song because they saw the sheet music. They heard the song. You know, a songwriter can write a song so that it actually causes us to make changes in vowel sounds. Like you have to do something to fill up that space that they made. Mm-hmm. I have seen you sing, I Put a Spell on You. Mm-hmm. Your I Put a Spell on You is different than the original I Put a Spell on You, but you still had to do something in those because you're mine, right? Yeah, there's all this exactly. Time. You can't just be like, because you're mine. You can't just like pick some weird note and just hold it the whole time, because then you've stopped communication. And that song is full of frustration and anger, or the singer is full of frustration and anger and hopelessness. And that's reflected in how long those notes are held. And so sometimes the song itself is written so in a way that you have to mess with the sounds in it differently than you would in speech. And then there's, again, back to bias, you know, audience expectations. If you want to sing a cover of something or sing the original of something that no one's ever heard before, you have to realize that songs aren't happening in a vacuum. They're happening in society. And society has expectations. We only have the music we have now because Elvis Presley existed. And we only have Elvis Presley because blues musicians existed. Art begets art. Songs beget songs. Each artist brings something to the song. The song that was written brings something to the song. And if the song was famous before, whoever made that song famous before brings something to that song. And all three of those things have to find an agreement together. Mm-hmm. You'll find that some singers, maybe they don't change their accent, because guess what? If they did, their relationship with their audience might shift, because accents also don't happen in a vacuum. Accents are there as part of our social markers. We use them to gain access to social groups. Some of us speak with only one accent. Some of us speak with several accents because we frequent several social groups. And it's not the only social marker we have. Everything about us is a social marker. How we move, the words we use, the things we talk about, what we wear, what we drive, what we eat, all of those things are markers of social groups. But accent is one of those ones that we can get denied. We can be a part of a social group in other ways, But if we shift our accent up and try to join the social group with that accent, we can get rejected.
And actually, while you're saying this, someone that actually popped to mind is Adele, being a classic example of someone who has a very, I suppose, a particular accent that a lot of people would notice. And then when she sings, you don't hear it as much. Do you believe that that is down to expectations within the music that she's singing and the style of music?
I think almost all of it has to do with that kind of trend. There's a small portion that has to do with actually the mechanics of what's happening during a song. Mm-hmm. So if you sing a Scottish song in your Scottish accent, mm-hmm. there's still going to be some shift at some point, likely in the song, mm-hmm. that you wouldn't do if you were speaking those same words. So that's one thing. The other thing is then, what is the expectation, or what is the style you're trying to do? You know, the only reason we're all pointing out how the accents are changing is because accents are part of social group markers. We don't point out, wow, that person is singing opera with the back of their mouth really open. Of course they are. That's how it gets to be opera. You know, it's hard to sing a country song in an Australian accent and have it accepted by people who sing country songs, unless it's a specific Australian artist singing it, and there's a specific reason why that song also resonates in an Australian culture.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's complicated. It's not just the music. I was taught in school that, oh, accents disappear when you sing. And it wasn't until I kept studying that I was like, wait a minute, no, they don't. I listen to music from all over the world, and I'm not hearing whatever this mysterious neutral accent is, because there isn't one. You know, the word neutral accent just means the accent that is the prestige accent of the moment. Someone has decided that this is the prestige accent, so we're going to call that neutral, and everybody else is mm-hmm. odd. Yeah. You know, everybody else is particular, strange, and weird, but this is the neutral. No, there is no neutral. It's all about our cultural and personal biases as to how we perceive the sounds that are coming toward our ears, what meaning we make of that. And we are definitely making meaning out of how people speak and how people sing. You know, we're noticing, oh, that person talks like this and sings like that. Uh-huh. And that actor talks like that. And then when in this role, they act like that and they talk like this. We don't fault them for that. Why are we confusing singers and really pressuring them to justify why they've sung the way they've sung? They're singing to communicate. They're singing to move us. If I play Beethoven's Fifth, I can't play it. But if I play it on a toy piano, it's going to come out very differently than if I play it on a grand piano, unless I want that result of that tinny little lightness of like, oh, that's funny, such a heavy piece of music on such a little tinkly thing. I better default and get the real piano. Mm-hmm. You know, if I want to have that same impact that Beethoven's Fifth has on a grand piano, I need to use a grand piano. I can't put it on a toy piano and expect people to be moved in that same way. They're going to move in a different way. So some singers do this purposefully. Some singers do it intuitively.
There's a portion of people who will be like, well, that's fake. They're singing in a fake way. And I've always been like, well, how can it be fake when it is your body?
That's biases and expectations. It's the same thing as when we see one of those singing competitions, you know, America's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, The World's Got Talent, whatever these wonderful shows are, and out comes a tiny little 6-year-old girl And then she's singing like she's a 55-year-old woman who's seen the world. We're shocked and surprised, and most people are delighted, like, wow, I didn't expect that. But that's a bias that we're, or a trip through bias that we're more comfortable taking. And that goes back to the cultural aspects of accent and our whole vocal quality. What is the tribe allowing? What are they going to allow this person to do or that person to do? Do you know that singer Leon Redbone?
No. No,
look up Leon Redbone. Leon Redbone has a really interesting singing style, and it's almost as he's singing. It's like, but it's really captivating. And he got lauded for it. But you know, there's 110 other people that didn't get lauded for something similar. The right person didn't hear it and put it in the right place for the other right people to hear it so that it became popular and everyone else was like, oh, I guess that's right then. We have to look at what Malcolm Gladwell, who's a business writer, says about the tipping point. There are early adopters of things, people who say, wow, I have never heard that before. That is amazing. I would like to see more of that. And then a few others gather and it's kind of slow. But then once enough people gather, then everyone's like, oh yeah, that's right. That's how we do it, you know? And one of the singers of the world that succeeded at that was Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley is literally world renowned. Enough people were both adopted with what he was doing, loved what he was doing, and then that they influenced everybody else to believe that that's good. The Beatles also, you know, that's good. That's good music, we are told. And so we start off with that bias, that's good music and other music is compared to it. You know, I say we, but, you know, looking at like the world culture as a whole, which is crude, not accurate generalization. But, you know, we do need to look at generalizations as well as specificities in order to really understand what's happening with communication and all of that. But as for sounding fake, if you're looking at somebody else and perceiving them as fake, it could be about the biases, like the young man with the older man's voice. It can also be if that person wasn't communicating clearly. If I change up how I'm going to talk to you right now, but I also add a little space between how I'm thinking and what I'm saying, I may come off as a little more fake because I'm not actually communicating directly to you now. I'm trying to put a stopper in between where I'm thinking a lot about how my mouth is moving. And so even if I'm hitting all the aspects that belong in a specific accent, you may say I'm fake because I'm not communicating anymore. I'm caught in the mechanics. I'm back in the place of mechanics instead of you have to have mechanics have to be in order. You have to be able to string those individual sounds together. You have to coordinate them. And then you've got to, you can make sense, right? Somebody will be like, oh, I understood what they were trying to say, mm-hmm. and I will think about that. But then there's true communication, where I take my experience that's in my head, and I seem to shoot it right into yours. And so you're like, I get it. And that's where we have to be when if we take on a new accent in speaking or singing, if we take on a new accent, we have to be in that place where we are truly communicating through that accent. That accent is an avenue of communication. It is as viable as any second language we speak. It's as viable as any of the other accents that we use in our own life back and forth, as we can say code switch from group to group. It's got to be there. And if you feel fake yourself when you try something, it's just because you didn't know you had that facet and you have an understanding of yourself as this and you didn't know that. It's like when children start to become adults physically, they're like, what is happening? Like, you know, there's that moment of, I don't even understand any of this. I didn't sign up for this, you know, all of that. It's just that. You're just finding another facet of yourself, and that just takes time to get used to and to learn to love.
One of the things I want to talk about is American influence on popular culture, since that is a huge portion of why people go for like American vowel choices, because often that's where it comes from. That's where that style of music comes from. So people are tending towards that.
Until there's a point where, you know, musicians, singers, vocalists who just are sitting at the right place in society at the right time to say, oh, well, you've been hearing there's rap that's not based on the original rap music that came out of the U.S. There are accents that occur in rap music that aren't associated with what originally came out of rap and hip-hop to start with. If we want to hear more accents in songs, we have to try them, and we have to figure out, like, what's the strategic move? Like, who gets to do that? If David Bowie were still with us, he gets carte blanche. He can do whatever he wants to. If he decided to change something up, we'd all be like, oh, well, that's a great idea because you're David Bowie. And he wouldn't get trounced for it. You know, we have these subcultures in society, and then we have sort of like cultures that mix together and become their own little societies. And each popular singer has a place in that world and has certain leverage or power to do things, and other ones just don't. It's just how society functions. As individuals, we don't have control over society, but we have to recognize that it's there and see where we are sitting right now to see what our cards are that we can play to navigate where we want to go. Back to the woman with the throat singing, you know, she managed to find three different cultures, three different little pieces of society that she could hook into. Whether she did it on purpose or by happenstance, it doesn't really matter in the course of history. It happened, and so she hit. Last thing I would just love to say to you is this. I think it's important for everybody, as we're getting trained in speaking or singing, to recognize that there are some fantastic, wonderful people who will train us that won't have every answer accurate, especially at the university setting, because universities tend to be about 25 to 40 years behind what common knowledge is. And that's a pretty bold statement to make, but it's also pretty accurate. Because if we look at how people become college professors of the arts, they go to college of the arts. And so you learn to really respect the people who wrote the books that you read, and you base what you're doing on that. And it takes a long time for that to change over to something new. Meanwhile, science just goes whoo and goes right past. And so be aware as you train that training methods will change over time. Mm-hmm. In the accent world, we've had a huge change in how everything is done in the last decade, because now everybody has a recording studio in their pocket. It used to be, was really difficult if we said, oh, that actor needs to speak English, but with an accent from Madagascar. You'd say, great, I'm in Iowa. I don't know anybody in Madagascar. Let me look up some old movies maybe to find something. And so it was based on something that wasn't real, you know, and now just go, wait a minute, let me just go to YouTube and look up the Madagascar kid and find the 17-year-old in Madagascar who has a podcast, call him and interview his parents. And so you have that right there. And then we have live action MRIs. Are you using those in singing?
Yes, yes. It's so fascinating between different vocal styles to see what is going on, because of course that sort of stuff wasn't around until recently.
Very recently. That rhotic R that appears in my accent and accents of many, many Americans, mm-hmm. Very difficult to explain what's happening. Mm-hmm. Very difficult for a phonetician to explain what's happening. You say, well, your tongue is bracing on your molars in the back and you're bunching it mm-hmm. and you're sending voiced air over it. And you're like, okay, nope, try again. You know, even American children, we have a lot of children that end up going into speech therapy at school because they can't figure out how to make that ah. They're getting really close to the ah, but they can't get the ah. Mm-hmm. Because you can't see it, it's not visible, but now you can. I've shown people who had who come from a non-rhotic accent of English, mm-hmm. And had a really hard time figuring out how not to over-articulate or get near that sound, but not so it sounds native. Mm-hmm. Show them an on a scan, they go, oh, okay.
That all makes sense.
Yeah.
It's been interesting actually working in the metal community recently, because there's so much new science about vocal distortions particularly, which can be quite divisive as well, because different people have different ideas. because no one's still quite sure about everything yet. It's fascinating to watch as it evolves anyway.
You're making me think about, too, the idea that, you know, most of us speak. So on the one hand, because we're so familiar with it, we think that it must be fairly simple. Mm-hmm. Because we're not rocket scientists and brain surgeons, but we can all speak. And it's truly very complicated. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until maybe 20 years ago that they figured out that the vocal folds had specific kinds of cell layers in them. Mm. You know, that they used to try to take a vocal note out by taking off a whole layer of the vocal fold, and then the person couldn't talk.
Yeah.
We're learning all the time, and it's important to continue to embrace the new tools that are given to us and to let go of the old ones that no longer serve us. You know, the things that we used to think were accurate are now more accurate because we have more information. You know, that's the big thing, I think, for everybody, speakers and singers. You don't have to get mad at your training to say, well, why did you tell me that this happened? Well, that's because that's what they thought. You know, that's where we were. And now we're in a different place. Now we're really seeing with better eyes all the time.
Rawr. Big thanks to Pamela. Now, if you'd like to check out Pamela's work, she has an accent coaching company. I will put the links all in the description. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast app of choice. It really helps us get these episodes out to more people. And if you'd like to support the podcast and get early access to episodes, do head over to my Patreon, which is patreon.com/BethRoars. Once again, massive thanks to Pamela for chatting to me, to my co-producer Tom, and of course, to you guys for listening. See you in the next one. Bye.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.